started talking about the concept of Tochelos and Lashon Hara. The reason we focused on that topic is because Lashon Hara as a whole is a topic of that pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim and all of Tezri and Mitzara. And we could just spend hours and hours talking Lashon Hara. No one ever gets tired of talking Lashon Hara. But to contain it somewhat, the reason I'm focusing on the topic of Tochelos, besides its importance, it's a very important issue, but also, we could argue that that's the topic that's most directly brought up by the pasuk. That if we really want to try to stick to the pasuk itself, without branching out too much, so the balance between the two halves of the pasuk could be theoretically focused on Tochelos. That first we have Lo Seilech Rachel V'Amecha. One should not walk around as a talebearer, and then the pasuk ends. On Thursday, we mentioned that the Rambam actually just reads this as one continuum as a way of comparing Lashon Hara to killing someone, but one could just as well say that we have a balance between two sometimes conflicting goals. Then on the one hand, we shouldn't talk badly about others, but then we also have an imperative of Lo Samar Al Dam Re'acha, that we can't stand by if somebody is at risk. So that was one possible understanding of Tochelos. We saw that really there are two ways to look at it. That we could see Lashon Hara as a bad midah. You have a character trait of being a gossip. In which case you could argue that if it's the Tochelos, then it's simply not a part of that midah. It's not purposeless, it's purposeful. And therefore maybe it's simply not Lashon Hara at all. Lashon Hara is defined by talking for the sake of gossiping. Alternatively, we could say that Lashon Hara is about hurting someone through speech. And in that case, when you're speaking with Tochelos, you are doing Lashon Hara. It's not excluded from the definition. It very much is the definition. If you're going to cost somebody a shidduch, you're going to cost somebody a job opportunity. So you're certainly hurting them. But nonetheless, why do we do it? Because we have the needs of the third party, the innocent third party, that outweigh this problem, that gives us a overriding concern. So then it's basically a conflict between Lo Samar Al Dam Re'acha and Lo Seilech Rachel V'Amecha, the two halves of the pasuk, and Lo Samar will in many cases win. Jonathan?
I know we have a concept of Lo Samar Al Dam Re'acha, but also then we have, let's say, if someone puts a gun to your head, so you have the option to let yourself die or kill someone else. So we say that there's a difference between actively killing someone and passively killing someone. So why can't you say over here, you're actively messing this guy over by talking Lashon Hara instead of passively letting the other guy get into a business deal and losing out money from him?
Well, so the model of putting a gun to your head, it's not really, we don't usually distinguish there between active and passive so much that there, I mean, in some contexts we do, but there the issue is that we have a din of Yehari V'Yavor, that you're not allowed to kill somebody else who's innocent,
right,
even if it's to save your own life. But if the person who is causing the threat is the one who would be killed, or the person is a rodev, so then you're obligated or permitted to kill the person. So the model would transfer here a little bit differently, that we're not talking about verschmutzing an innocent party. We're talking about that if somebody is a threat to somebody else, so then we won't exactly call it rodev, but it will actually parallel it in some degree, that your need to protect your third party, and probably also yourself, is a justification to say what has to be said about the person. But the two different models that we see, whether it's not Lashon Hara at all, or whether it is Lashon Hara but it's outweighed by Lo Samar Al Dam Re'acha, it really does make a big difference which one it is, because it affects the question of how high is the threshold, what type of pressing need do we need to have, that if it's just that it's not defined as Lashon Hara, so then, okay, you don't really have to have such a high threshold as long as you have some positive purpose. It'll help society in the long run, whatever it is, that'll be enough. But if it's about Lo Samar Al Dam Re'acha, so as we'll discuss, because it's also part of the pasuk, if not part of our topic, but Lo Samar Al Dam Re'acha does not only mean death, doesn't only mean somebody's going to die, it means much less than that as well. But still, it means some standard of harm that's going to be enough to outweigh the damage done to the person you're speaking about, or to justify the damage done to the person that you're speaking about. So it's going to be a somewhat higher threshold. And I think we started to say there was that questionable comment in the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim himself questions it, but others questioned it more, when he said that if you see somebody shopping in a store, do we talk about this? See somebody shopping in a store, and you tell them they can get a better price across the street, so the Chafetz Chaim wasn't so sure it was mutter to do that. Another said, what do you mean it's not mutter? That's straight up toelas. You're helping the person save money. So the suggestion could be, there are a couple of different ways people have looked at that psak of the, or that tentative psak of the Chafetz Chaim. But perhaps what the Chafetz Chaim is getting at is that he's questioning what exactly is the necessary threshold. That you could say, all right, if a person is a predator, if you have a predator and a victim, so for sure you'd speak about the predator to protect the victim. But if there's no predator per se, it's just that, okay, this guy will be a little bit better off if he knows this information. But the person you're speaking about, his parnasa depends on his reputation, and you're going to paint him as the more expensive store. So won't you perhaps, or maybe we have to at least think about it, that maybe you'll do much more damage to this guy than the degree to which you're helping the other person. And again, just to emphasize, this is not a predator-victim situation. And we're not talking about a very high-stakes endeavor where somebody's marrying somebody, somebody's entering into a serious business commitment with somebody, presumably he's talking about a somewhat minor amount of savings. And not, again, we'll even say that it's not, he's not being overcharged, he's not a victim. That would make him a victim also of some type of onus. Let's say it's not outside of the market differential. You could just get a better deal across the street. Hi.
So you say would be similar maybe to a very common conversation you talk about with friends, let's say, about a specific restaurant. You ask them how it was, and then very commonly say, oh, it was so expensive. So if it was in, like, say, I guess not out of the market range of what, I don't know, a steak is supposed to be, would that also be problematic?
So that also gets to, I think it gets to the question of what the Chafetz Chaim is getting at. You know, what exactly is his point there? There are those who would say the thing should be straight out mutter, that your person has the right not to waste his money or waste his time, and we talk about other such things. It's a discussion, let's say, if you talk about book reviews or other types of endeavors where you're evaluating products that people will spend their time and their money on, so then it's the toelas that people shouldn't waste their time, shouldn't waste their money, and they should be told about what the ups and downs are. Now that, I think, is true in theory, but in practice, one probably should be careful. So again, the question is, yes, you certainly have the right to help people protect their time and their money, but that still doesn't mitigate all the other factors. So you want to make sure that whatever you're saying is fair and put in a proper context and doesn't represent your biases and are relevant. I also wonder, for example, in the context of a book review, so if it's going to affect their decision whether to buy the book or to read the book, and it should affect their decision, so then that seems reasonable. It also seems reasonable if you're going to say something that's going to, let's say, you know they're going to read the book, but you think some of the points are wrong, so you want to clarify those issues so that that can also be a part of the reading experience. Presumably, that's also a toelas. But let's say, I don't know, you don't like the color of the cover. So if you're going to bias the reader against the things that aren't the toelas at all, it's an interesting question whether that's a productive comment to make. It's something that's not going to affect their decision whether to read the book or not. Or let's say, for example, I'm still thinking about this once, I wanted a question. Let's say a person is reading a book that has information that's solid, but he made some spelling mistakes. So if you call attention to the spelling mistakes, the person's going to read the book anyway. It's not a question of saving the time and the money. You're basically just doing it to be mavaz them, so to speak. And it doesn't really accomplish anything. It's an interesting question. Is that considered to be a litoelis? So you could talk, you could think about the details, but the basic point being that, yes, we can acknowledge that reviews of products that are out there to be used, whether they are restaurants or books or anything else, is theoretically litoelis, theoretically should be permitted. I don't know if that necessarily absolves the reviewer of any type of care and concern in terms of how he conveys his message. Presumably it doesn't. He should still think about what he's saying and how he's saying it to make sure that it was as unbiased as possible, or at least his bias is out there, and that it is, will be taken in a way that is effective. I think Michael was up first there.
Yeah. Many times people find spelling mistakes in books that were translated specifically. Mm-hmm. And that could be a lituels because it's representative of the quality of the translation.
Yeah,
the amount of time that they put into it.
I agree. I wouldn't necessarily say any absolute statements about any of these details. I'm just kind of making up an example. I think sometimes you do find that that's done intentionally. Somebody would call attention to a minor issue because it's his way of saying that there wasn't proper care taken with the whole endeavor, or that the person, I can think of some examples of this, that they do that to make the point that the person is not in his field. So again, I would not make any blanket statements about what can or could not be said in these contexts. I think it's just a question that maybe is worth asking. It's interesting, the Chafetz Chaim, again in his Tzidkus, and many of the later Svarim who have argued on different points of the Chafetz Chaim, reflect the fact that the Chafetz Chaim sometimes seems to be living on a different madriga, as he presumably was, than the rest of us, and we're not always able to relate to the concerns that he has, but it's worth considering them and understanding what he's getting at. So the Chafetz Chaim says one concern he has when he talks about his various conditions for toelas. So the concern that he mentions, we'll put it in a different framework, that part of the issue is if you're going to say something that's litoelas, then you should make sure it's litoelas. You know, if you're going to go after the king, you make sure you kill the king. If you're going to go after the job, make sure that you do the job successfully, because to say lashon hara that could be litoelas, so it feels justified, but it's not going to make it that far because of the way you're doing it. So that's its own concern. Now, I think we can't really expect everyone to be so precise, and sometimes some of these psakim assume that you can really totally assess exactly how everything will be taken away everyone else and what the impact will be. And halavai, that's true. I don't think we're on that madriga, really, that we always can make these assessments correctly. Halavai, we'd all have a much more harmonious lives if we could really perfectly assess how everything we said is going to be taken by everybody who we speak to. But a lot of what Chafetz Chaim writes is premised on that. So he has a concern, for example, says, you have to worry about this. So let's give an example of a shidduch, okay? So if you know that something that's relevant to their consideration whether to marry each other or not, so then you should tell them what they need to know to decide whether they're going to marry each other or not. But he also says you have to be concerned that maybe you'll say something which will not be perceived by them to be litoelas. They're going to go through with it anyway, so you're not going to have any impact on the decision. But then later on, when they fight 5 years from now, 10 years from now, they get into a fight about something, and then they'll say, "Oh, I remember, I was told about you," and now they're going to have a more contentious relationship because of the lashon hara that they heard. So it won't do the full toelas job. It won't accomplish its goal of really making a difference in the decision that it's supposed to impact, but it'll still have a lashon hara effect. So again, I don't know how realistic it is to assume that the speaker can always really assess the exact impact, that we really give people a lot of credit to say that people can really tell. But his point being that you shouldn't say something which won't be accepted enough to be litoelas, but will be accepted just enough to do lashon hara kind of damage. I don't know, again, if we can really credit ourselves with that ability so much, but the point is well taken. The point is that the heading of toelas will sometimes justify certain conversations, but then the goal should really be that it really will be litoelas. And to the extent that you can assess this, that if you know that you're going to say something that's not going to make the mark, or you don't do enough to make it make the mark, then that's something to think about. To give an example from another area of Hilchos Lashon Hara, so I said I don't want to talk about everything in Hilchos Lashon Hara because we could spend weeks, but just to bring it into this discussion, so the Gemara has a heter called Apeit Lasa, something that's in front of three. And there's a big discussion what that means in front of three. It means it was known in front of three, the speaker said in front of three, you're allowed to speak if you say in front of three. Different interpretations of the Rishonim. So Rabbi Yona has a statement where he says that Lashon Hara should dafka be said in front of three. What does that mean? It's the least intuitive interpretation. You think that if you're going to say something bad, then it gets worse if it's in front of a lot of people. So his point was that he's talking about you're saying something that is litoelas. So if it's going to be litoelas, then you can't just whisper it to somebody in the corner where it's not going to do any good. Then it's just gossip. The same lashon hara, it could be litoelas, is going to be gossip if it's not done in a productive way. So therefore, if you're going to say it, so say it in a way that will make a difference. To say it just to whisper it to one person is not kedai. You find that, for example, we talk about the Torah has a requirement of two edim. So what if one aid wants to speak in a way that he knows he's not going to be effective? So sometimes it's the difference between edus and lashon hara. But if it's edus, you're going to have the effect. You have another aid. So then good. So then you'll accomplish something. But if one aid is going to talk in a context where he can't make a difference because he's one aid, this is in certain unique circumstances. This is not so relevant to our contemporary batei din. But the theory is, and the point is, just that it all goes back to, again, the Chofetz Chaim's point, which is also not necessarily so practical in his exact case. But the meta message is that it's kedai to try, to the extent that we can, to weigh whether our Toelas comments are La Toelas. Now, of course, if we're talking about Toelas, where you're really going to deal with somebody who's at risk, somebody really could be affected by this information, so you really have to err on the side of saying it. You have to, the goal of protecting the innocent party is going to be an overwhelming equation. Now, when we talk about the balance of whether it's true or not, so then the question is, you could be freshmutzing an innocent person, or you could be protecting an innocent victim. So that's a much harder decision, that you really have to be very, very careful. But if the question is, you know there's an innocent victim who you need to protect, you're just not sure whether this will hit the exact mark of Toelas or not, so then you really have to err on the side of protection, because that's clearly the more important goal. But just, again, the theoretical issue in terms of trying to assess what's the Toelas and what's not, that's something that you find being invoked in this context. A very tricky point, there's no question. I am.
For instance, Rabbeinu Yonah, if you're talking like in Shidduchim, for instance, and you just want to know, I mean, whatever thing you know about the girl or you know about the guy, so you therefore want to say it not only to potential Shidduch, but you want to say it to like multiple Shidduchim?
No, not necessarily. That's an interesting question in itself, which we can talk about it in a second. We'll come back to that point. I wouldn't necessarily say that. It depends what you're talking about, but that's a question of degree. But I think his point is that you don't just whisper it to nobody, you whisper it to a person who's not going to make a difference. You say it to somewhere where it's going to make a difference. Those of you who were here, we talked about this a little bit, Parshas Tazria Metzora, and that's interesting. Not everybody was here, so we'll just quickly restate this point, because it's relevant also. There is a story that I remember hearing many years ago, and then I saw in more recent years that Rav Yitzchok Zilberstein discusses it, Lahalacha, and in Lahashkafa, two different svarim of his that I saw, where he talks about this. But the story that I had heard was that there were these two seminary girls on a bus, not to discriminate against seminary girls, just the story. I think he has in the title also. But anyway, so these two seminary girls are on the bus, and they're talking about their classmate who just got engaged. And they weren't being so nice to her. They're saying unflattering things about this girl, a pella she got engaged, considering all her chesreinus. So they're talking for a while, and they get to the next stop, and there's an older woman behind them who gets off at that stop, and as she's getting off, she says to the girls, you know, I heard what you're saying, and I'm so glad that I did, because I happen to be the mother of the chassan who got engaged to this girl. But now that I know about all her flaws, I'll make sure to tell my son and he'll break off the shidduch. So they got very, you know, appalled. Chas v'shalom, we didn't mean it, don't take it so seriously. We're just girls gossiping, we don't really have any real meaning behind what we're saying, please ignore the whole thing and don't take it so seriously. And they begged and pleaded with her. So finally the lady says to them, that, you know what, you want to know the truth, I'm not really the mother of this chassan, but I could have been. And then she gets off the bus. So there were a couple of points to that story. It happens to be that Rav Yitzchok Zilberstein discusses it in one place, he discusses it in a halach. Discusses in at least two places. I saw he talks about in Harevna, and I think in the third chalak. I think, is that what it was? One of the chalakim. There he talks about, from a halachic angle, was it mutter for this woman to do what she did? So she's trying, so that's the pasuk also in the Soliyah, right? That you have to issue rebuke. So the way she did it, which was basically sheker, and panic inducing. So she did two things which are questionable. She told the false fact, and she tortured these girls, essentially. So are either of those things permissible in the pursuit of Musar? So that's a fair question to ask. But part of the value of the story that we mentioned it for the purpose of Tazria Metzora is two things. First of all, Tazria Metzora kind of highlights what we don't have anymore, that we used to feel directly connected to the effects of our Lashon Hara because of the spiritual consequences and the physical consequences. nowadays we don't have tzaras, so it puts us in a much harder position that we could easily run away with our gossip and not ever feel the consequences. So a story like this is basically about saying that you think there's no consequences, look how close you are to consequences, and to feel a little bit more strongly the impact of what you say, especially again in an internet, Facebook connected era where people really forget about who's listening in and what's happening. That becomes a much more important message. But also what I thought the story kind of highlights is that people, by which I mean all of us, you know, we do the exact opposite of what the halacha is, that we're perfectly happy to speak Lashon Hara unless it's the Toelis, which is of course the opposite, that we're supposed to say something if it will make a difference, and we're not supposed to say something if it won't make a difference. So these girls, the message to them was, listen, if you think she's not right for the shidduch, if you think that the shidduch shouldn't happen, so then say it, and then come forward with it. But how come once it really had the impact, all of a sudden you were backing down and panicking? Because you realized that it didn't really have the gravity that justified it being said in the first place. So it kind of illustrates that point again, that if you really have something to say that should be said, so then they should not proudly, I mean, it's an epoch, it's not a happy duty, but you should with confidence go to the mother and say, listen, you need to know that this is the issue with the issue that this girl has. But they're saying the opposite, that they weren't willing to do it with Toelis, they're only willing to speak the gossip when it's not with Toelis, which is exactly the opposite attitude that we have to have, whether it's a question of the subject matter, whether it's a question of how it's transmitted. Then the question to say something or to not say something should be, if it's with Toelis and it will accomplish or could reasonably be expected to accomplish with Toelis, then you should say it, and if not, not, then this story kind of illustrates our tendency to do the opposite. And you could say it shows both. First of all, presumably what they were saying was not really substantive enough for it to be considered litoelos at all. And second of all, if it was, then they should have been telling the mother instead of being so appalled that their gossip was overheard by her and then taking it back. Hi.
In terms of like determining something litoelos, how exactly are you supposed to go about that?
Not an easy question, and I think that's what we talked about a little bit last week, that the question partially hinges on the whole issue of the pasuk. You know, is it that it's the toelos as long as you have positive intent, which the Chazon Ish tended to more, or is you have to have a whole list of qualifications, which is what the Chofetz Chaim tended to more. Chofetz Chaim had 7 criteria, and some of the criteria were criticized. And of course, you can see the danger in either position, that if you have too easy an attitude of Toelis, then everything goes. And if you have too many restrictions, and again, if we're assuming that Toelis is necessary to protect innocent people, so how can we let you be tied down by too many restrictions, which won't necessarily affect the question of whether or not you're dealing with somebody who's dangerous? So you can understand why both positions are controversial. And the truth is, as always the case, somewhere in the middle. But there are those who boil the Chafetz Chaim's conditions down to 3, and different ways of saying it, but that's already a step, that probably the 3 are that the intent should be to help and that there isn't another way to do it, there isn't a less damaging way to help, that you should be completely accurate and not editorializing at all in everything that you're saying, and that you shouldn't have ulterior motives. The ulterior motive was one of the ones that was criticized for various reasons, but we could focus on the fact that ulterior motives may create a bias, and we can kind of roll that one into the second one and say that you have to make sure that what you're saying is completely accurate. So I think it's fair to say that if you focus on those 2 criteria, which are subject to some level of degree and somewhat of a spectrum, but that you should be intending litoelis, which factors in a lot of other things. Are there other ways you could do this? Is it important toelis, etc., etc.? And that you should be heavily focused on accuracy. You should be heavily focused on making sure that you're not mixing in any bias, that you're not coming with second-hand information that's not reliable. Now, sometimes second information is also important if it's a big issue. Everything's going to be on somewhat of a scale, so you have to be able to factor all of that in. So it boils down to the fact that Lashon Hara, as serious an issue as it is a huge judgment call. Right? And things will flip between being severely prohibited to incredibly important to do, depending on your judgment call. Now that may sound like a big burden to have on our shoulders, but that's true in all the very important areas of life, because Let's say, for example, murder, we could all agree that's pretty serious. That's a tremendous avera. And at the same time, it's necessary when the person is a rodef. The person's going to kill you. So how do you know when which is which? It's your judgment call. It looks like the guy's coming at you with a gun. So you consider him a rodef. So this is not just a Jewish issue. This is a secular issue as well. If the person who shoots someone else, we know several stories in the news like this, you'll spend a year on trial trying to convince the court that you genuinely believe the guy was coming at you to kill you. So everything will hinge on your judgment, your assessment, whether it's Ritzicha Mamish, or whether it's what the Rambam compares to Ritzicha in the case of Lashon Hara. Everything's going to hinge on this judgment call. So one could argue that's also why the Pasuk ends with Ani Hashem. As we often find that when the Torah has the phrase either V'yareisim Elokecha, as we see by Lifnei Iver, which has a similar component to it, or the idea of Ani Hashem, when God is reminding you that He's there in the middle of a pasuk. So very often, as Rashi tells us, that's the way of saying it's a davar hamasur lalev. It's the kind of thing which you could do, and outwardly no one will ever know whether your intentions are pure or not, whether you're doing things for the right reasons or the wrong reasons. But God knows. So I think the issue here is that this is a constant judgment call, and you have to make the right decisions, and you spend a whole lifetime honing your sensitivity so that you'll make the right decisions. And you can easily cover for yourself, and you can indulge in gossip and say that, well, I mean a Latoelis, when really a fair assessment would say it's not Latoelis. And you could do the opposite. You could fail to protect someone and let someone get hurt and say, well, I was being careful in Lashon Hara, when a responsible assessment would say that you should have said something. So it's up to you to have that responsible evaluation of things, and perhaps that's why the Pasuk is reminding us, Ani Hashem, that God is watching. He knows what you're thinking. He knows how much of a serious internal effort you have brought to this process, and that's what we're asking for you here. So all of the emphasis that the Chafetz Chaim really brought to the study of Lashon Hara, and all of the movements that have sprung up in the past couple of decades to focus on the study of Lashon Hara, so first of all, no one should misunderstand, it's not to the exclusion of Latoelis. Half the Sefer Chafetz Chaim is about what you have to say. Latoelis, that's not what Lashon Hara means. It doesn't mean always err on the side of not saying something. It means that we have to spend a lot of time studying the subject, because it's so easy to make the wrong decision in one way or the other. And the quality of the character will have a big impact. So last week's parashas, I don't think we had a chance to say this or not, I'll take a question in a second, but last week's parashas that talk about Tazria Metzora, and I think we mentioned on Thursday that you might feel, okay, it's not Nogay to me, literally, it's not Nogay, that doesn't come up anymore. So nonetheless, you find the Pasuk in Parashas Kitzetze, where Torah tells us, Hishamer Beneged Saras, and the Ma'aril says, that's the main Ister Lashon Hara, is that Pasuk. And right after that pasuk in Kisei, so the Torah tells us to remember what happened to Miriam. And Miriam was somebody who was afflicted because of her speaking Lashon Hara. And that pasuk, the Ramban quotes as a mitzvah, as two psukim together, maybe it's a asay and a los asay, Hishamer b'neged saras, and remember what happened to Miriam. And the Ramban says that this probably should be counted as a mitzvah saseh. It probably should be counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. So why is this concept so lucky? So the Ramban says, see, you shouldn't come to speak Lashon Hara. So that's great, but there's all kinds of averas in the Torah, and it's not the case that every time there's an avera, there's a story about somebody who violated the avera and was punished, and then there's a special mitzvah to remember the avera and remember the punishment. It's not the case. And to give you an example of how it almost could have been the case, so Shabbos is pretty important, and we have a story of the Mekoshe Sheitzim, who Taka violated Shabbos and was punished, but nobody says there's a special mitzvah saseh to remember the story of the Mekoshe Sheitzim. So why is Lashon Hara so lucky that of all the prohibitions in the Torah, this is the one that has a special mitzvah that you should remember it? So Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Sher was a Mashgiach in Slobodka, so he suggested that if you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Avak Lashon Hara, when the Rambam talks about this kind of second degree Lashon Hara that exists, so one of the examples he gives is, let's say you say something nice about someone, and it comes out in a negative way. It comes out to disparage the person. So that's Avak Lashon Hara. So you could argue, well, what do you want from me? If you tell me not to be nasty, then I'll try not to be nasty. But here the whole point is you were trying to be nice and it came out in a nasty way. So how could you tell somebody to control for that? That was the whole point, that they didn't know it was going to come out nasty. So says Rav Yitzchak Isaac Sher, that's what you have in mitzvah to remember Miriam, that this is not the kind of avera where a person can say, okay, I'll just take it as it comes. I'll just live my life and I'll try to make the right decisions and everything will be okay. Because it's way too complicated. You're for sure going to say something you don't want to say under those circumstances. So the only way you're going to be successful in this area is if you practice in advance, if you think about this a lot, and you remember things like, look what happened to Miriam. So Miriam said tzadikas, and Miriam certainly meant well. And yet, Miriam also had a problem with Lashon Hara, a one-time problem, and paid the price. So we're told to remember that so that we could realize that we have to really think about this in advance. We have to work on developing personalities that have somewhat of a connection to the impact, because otherwise we're going to have problems. Otherwise, it's going to be an issue. So that's probably what this pasuk is telling us, that we have a delicate balance. That we have to be very careful with how we speak. We have to be careful both with what we say and what we don't say. We could do something wrong in both directions. And okay, all you can do is make an honest decision and an honest evaluation of which path to take. But realize, Ani Hashem, I'm God who's watching. I expect you to think about this carefully in general. I expect you to try to create a personality who will have the requisite sensitivities. And I expect you to be honest about your evaluation, internally honest about your evaluation process, and to do that which really is justified, and to not fail to do that which really is necessary, and to come up with the right decisions. But you had a question about that?
In terms of Toelis, if there's no real chisaron involved, but like, let's say there's a chinuch lesson there for kids.
Okay, so that's a big question. You know, like, just this pasuk, we're not getting past this one pasuk today, and there's so much else in this aliyah. But I was just thinking, okay, so just as I was walking in, I was thinking, so okay, we narrowed down our Lashon Hara discussion just to Toelis. We'll just talk about that one subject. We won't talk about all the other issues in Lashon Hara. But just thinking about Toelis topics that we didn't speak about on Thursday, right? So just half of Toelis. Made a list of about 20 topics that we could get to. So we're not going to get to that. That's how broad this topic is. But among those, the question of chinuch is a fascinating question. And that has a number of issues. So just to touch upon some of them. So first of all, where your point about where it's beneficial versus preventing mamish harm. So it's an interesting question. So could I give you guys an example by name of somebody who did an avera and it messed up his life and it's a cautionary tale? So that would seem to be totally on the whole question, that if it's Lashon Hara is a midos issue, so I'm not gossiping, I'm doing it for chinuch purposes. But if it's about hurting someone through speech, so then I probably am hurting this guy, and he's not a danger to anyone, let's assume in my example. So if he's not a danger to anyone, what's my heter to hurt him? It's not a quick case of los amar al dam reacha, the fact that it'll help you understand more. So maybe we have to really evaluate how big the toilet is, etc., etc. It's a discussion you have to have. It's interesting, there's another question you could ask. Klal Yisrael has already paskined on this issue, but the poskim weren't so sure. And the question of, let's say you speak about people, but you conceal their identity successfully. Now sometimes people aren't so successful. Let's say you could really successfully conceal the identity. So everyone assumes for sure that's mutter. That's always been the attitude of Klal Yisrael. As long as you conceal the identity, you can say whatever you want. The poskim weren't so sure about that. There is some discussion about it in some of the literature. And the issue seems to be that it's like a gossip column kind of thing to do. Which famous celebrity was seen doing it? So even though you're not identifying the person, you're still indulging in gossip and the dirt. It's still a bad mitzvah. So from the perspective of harming somebody, okay, so the names have been changed to protect the guilty. But in the case of the issue of the character trait, the mitzvah of being a gossip, that you probably still are doing. So go back to the question of the teacher who wants to mention somebody who's a cautionary tale. So if he leaves out the name of the person he's talking about, then he's probably okay according to both considerations. It's not for the purposes of gossip, it's for the purposes of education and inspiration. And he's not hurting anyone because he leaves out the identity, successfully leaves out the identity of who he's talking about. So that's in terms of that. But there were other issues that come up in terms of chinuch, and it is a fascinating debate that took place. There is a very famous tshuva Moshe Feinstein wrote in the 60s that was hotly debated, and it's really a fascinating topic. Rav Moshe says that if you have a teacher who has a class and somebody did something wrong and the teacher doesn't know who, so Rav Moshe says it's not appropriate for a teacher to ask a student to tell on the other student. So that's one thing if a student comes forward on his own, it's a different story, but for the Rebbe to put a student in the position of telling on the other student, he felt that was very inappropriate because you're essentially training him in Lashon Hara. And that evoked, as you can imagine, Lashon Hara, let's say, because Masira means something else. It's a whole other discussion. Let's assume the person is genuinely guilty of something. Let's assume that Masira doesn't apply when it's a fair, actual crime and a fair punishment. But let's say it's just in terms of Lashon Hara. So Rav Moshe said that you should not encourage the children to speak about each other. It'll train them in Lashon Hara. And many other machabrim took very strong issue with this. And they said that, look, part of Hilchos Lashon Hara is Tawelah. So and the Rebbe's job is to teach things properly. So why shouldn't he teach the children that you're not supposed to speak badly for no purpose, but you should speak when it's the Tawelah, and this is the Tawelah, and therefore tell me what happened. So why should that not be the message? More recently, there's a lot of literature about this. When Rav Moshe first wrote this in the 60s, there were many responses. More recently, our friend Rav Asher Weiss has a piece about this in one of his Svarim, I think, on Chumash, and he's very against this tshuva. He thinks it's completely wrong because he thinks there is an obligation of toeles and that should also be a part of the chinuch job of the Rebbe to convey that message. And he has a pretty sharp line there. He says if the Rebbe is not capable of teaching the job the way he should, so then okay, then maybe then in that case Rav Moshe is right. But the Rebbe's job should really be to convey this message. Or others suggest that maybe if you're dealing with very young children who can't tell the difference, that's what we're talking about. So there was a lot of objection to Rav Moshe's tshuva. But others agreed. Others understood that Rav Moshe was talking about a context where the hergel is an issue. They're going to be trained in gossip. And maybe he is talking about younger students, but the fact is the reason why he distinguishes between students who would come forward on their own and the Rebbe teaching them to do this. Others questioned that distinction. They said, well, why would you make such a chiluk if it's Lashon Hara? Then why would you let the student come forward on his own? But maybe the chiluk is davka for this point. One of the objections, Rav Moshe wrote two tshuvas about this. He wrote a tshuva and then many objected, then he wrote a response to some of those who objected, and it's an ongoing discussion. I'll show those two tshuvas about it. I'll give you the Maralkum later. And some said, well, if the Rebbe's job is to be mechanech, they should mechanech about the toelis issue. And also, aren't we worried that whatever issue is going to go unaddressed, that whatever other avaris are happening in the classroom, so the student's not going to learn about them? So others, I think Rav Moshe himself and others who were on his side, said, why are we assuming that whatever other issue is more important than Lashon Hara? You should address the Lashon Hara issue with greater priority than whatever the other issue is. Some of the responses thought there should be a chiluk, which is very logical. Are we talking about a student who's hurting other students, let's say? So then that certainly is a more pressing need to do something about it and to identify which student it is. Or are we talking about a case the student's hurting himself, that he's not progressing? You're going to report on a student who's missing minion, something like that, whatever it is, that also has an effect on everyone. Something that the student's personally failing in his religious standards, but he's not hurting anybody else. So then maybe that's a little bit of a question to what extent the other students should be involved in reporting on it. So this was a major issue. I'll tell you, Mashal Mahadavar Dome. So to tie things in a little bit of synergy to last semester, I don't think we mentioned this point when we talked about this last semester. So we talked about the question of Mutal Shanis Mifnei HaShalom, and how there are times when you're allowed, and it's recommended maybe, to say something not true for the sake of peace. So when I wrote about this once, Mori Barabi, Aaron Levine, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, wrote a little, as mentioned before, book reviews. So he wrote a review. He made the following point, which he's certainly a bar hachi to make, and he had a raya from the Gemara that this was true, that he said, so let's say, okay, Matlashanas Nehashalom, so let's say somebody calls your house and you don't have any time to speak to the person, but they'll be insulted if you tell them that. So you have your wife tell them that you're not home. So that presumably is mutter, right? It's not true, but it's done so that the guy shouldn't be insulted. You don't have the time to come to the phone one way or another. So better he should think you're not home than be offended. So to have your wife say that, mustama against ma'is b'chol yom, but mustama it's mutter because it's in the category of l'shanas ben hashalom. So said Rabbi Levine, yes, it is mutter to ask your wife to say that. It's not kedai to ask your 4-year-old kid to say that, but to ask your little kid to get on the phone and say daddy's not home when he knows that daddy is home. So then he's not going to chop what's mitnei hashalom, what's not mitnei hashalom, and the fact that this is okay. And all he's going to get is the message that it's okay to lie. And therefore, we have to have a different policy towards younger children and adults. And the more nuanced issues don't necessarily translate the same way when dealing with children at an earlier stage of chinuch. So that's presumably a parallel to Rav Moshe's point, which doesn't take away all the controversy surrounding it, but that's presumably what the Rav Moshe is saying, that yes, an adult will make a decision to Ellis, not to Ellis, and will know that he can preserve both values at once, while a child won't necessarily be able to have such a nuanced perspective, and all he will learn from the Rebbe telling him to talk is that he should talk about others, and that's a more dangerous message. So this is really a fascinating debate. Obviously, both these positions have a lot to be said for them and have great gedolim behind them. Pretty extensive literature. If you want some places to look, I'll give you later. But this is very much at the heart of this question. While we're talking about chinuch, so this is part of a larger question. Before you get to Rav Moshe in general, there is a whole literature about when it's appropriate to tell an authority figure about what somebody else is doing when he's not a risk to anyone else. Let's say it's his own personal growth, to tell a parent, to tell a rabbi. And there's a whole literature about that, which also does seem to relate to the Yosef story in Chumash, assuming again that Yosef was acting properly, as most assume. Somewhat of a discussion, most assume that Yosef was doing the right thing when it says, V'yave Yosef estibasim ra'al avihem. So that's the whole literature itself, and Rav Moshe's discussion and the debate around it is kind of a subset about that. Somewhat related but different points, so the Shevet HaKahasi was written by the Belzer Dayan. So he discusses, let's say, psychologists are saying that we don't want to put any kind of inhibitions on children speaking because it will have all kinds of impact on their development. So maybe we shouldn't teach little children about Lashon Hara b'chlal because it's going to inhibit them, it's going to squelch their development. So maybe not so surprisingly, he didn't agree with the premise. He says, no, you should teach them as soon as they're able to talk, you should teach them about the issues of Lashon Hara. It'll be an ongoing process. We are almost out of time, not surprisingly. We didn't finish half of this pasuk, let alone any other pasuk. But just one other issue, just we'll mention quickly before the clock goes out, is that one of the major questions also a suffix in the Chafetz Chaim, and there's extensive literature about this as well, and it's probably reasonable, it should be assumed, that if somebody needs to speak to a therapist, if somebody needs to go through a therapy, so then that's also considered to be litoelis. That's also considered to be something that is productive. It's an important part of your mental health. The Chafetz Chaim has a little bit of a suffix about this. But as he points out, it's pretty much befeirush in Chazal that it is litoelis. That the Gemara says in the 8th parak of Yuma, Darshan's a pasuk, Dagabli Ish Yashchena. If a person has worry in his heart, the pasuk says he should do something. So the Gemara has two different readings of what it means. Either he should try to forget about it, or yisichena la'acherim, that he should talk to people about it. If a person has issues, he should discuss it with people. Hi.
What is the gvul of that heter? That could lead to extreme...
Correct. Yeah, so that also takes... So the gvul is outside of our gvul now. The gvul is outside the scope of our time, but it's part... It goes back to our question of judgment call a little bit, that, you know, it should be litoelis. It should be focused on your own mental health, unless the person is a danger again, but if it's just a question of your issues with somebody, it should be focused on productive discussion, and therefore ideally it should be limited. If somebody needs to speak to a few people, then that might be the case, but it shouldn't be the whole world. There's a different version of this heter that's found in the Sefer Chassidim. The Sefer Chassidim is not really the full story here, but Sefer Chassidim says that sometimes there's a legitimate decision to be made to listen to Lashon Hara. If you know that somebody is on the warpath and he's going to talk to whoever he finds, and if you be the person, then he'll just talk to you and you'll be able to calm him down and that'll be the end of it, so it's kedai for you to listen. So in his scenario, if it's only one person, you should be the one person then in that case and stop it from being anywhere else. So his case is much more limited. He's not really acknowledging the whole benefit a person has. He's assuming the guy is basically an Avarian, which is not necessarily what we're assuming. And so it's not necessarily going to be exactly one person, but it should have a reasonable limit. That it's not a hetter to destroy the person. Again, let's assume the person's not a damage to anyone else. It's for one's own personal healing, so he should try to be fair to the person he's talking about and keep it as focused on what's necessary as possible. But the assumption is that that conversation is a useful conversation. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara in the 8th paragraph of Yuma. Rashi over there says you should talk to others because maybe they'll have an Eitzah. So it sounds like it's only if it's going to be the Toelis because the guy will tell you what to do. So then that's the Toelis. But I think we assume even more than that, that just the conversation itself can be the Toelis, even if the person you're talking to is not going to tell you practical thing what to do, but we should keep it focused. We found that this synergy, this comes up in our Tarumas discussion, that we found that there are times you had a bad experience with somebody that it might be appropriate to tell people about it, but even then, even those who said that Tarumas means you can tell people, they also said it doesn't mean just throwing him in front of the whole world. It means that within a reasonable context, you need to tell people what's necessary. So this is an important issue, this whole question of a toelis for a therapy, which just does seem to be is kedai and appropriate, but it's itself a whole discussion a little bit. And there is an interesting discussion that Yitzchok Zilberstein has, where just in terms of scope a little bit. So he has a tshuva, it was written to somebody whose mother was going through depression. So I said, it's very important. This was a young woman was saying she had to listen to her mother talk in order to alleviate her depression. She had to talk about all the tsaros that she has with people. She's going to talk about all her issues with various people. And so the girl said two things. She said, first of all, she thinks that it's necessary for her to listen in order for her mother's mental health to be improved. And she also doesn't think that it's going to accomplish much if she listens, but she refuses to believe it. She said, I'm not a gobble, but I'll listen. And she's clearly not going to believe it. She doesn't think that that's going to help too much. So as Zilberstein said, she's right on both premises. He says she should listen, and she doesn't have to disbelieve it. She can believe it also, believe that what's being told is true. But there's believing and there's believing. So you can still have an attitude of Dam L'chavzchus. You can believe that whatever issue the mother has is true. Doesn't necessarily mean that you have to think the people she's talking about are the worst people in the world because the mother is saying these things and they may be factual. It's possible to create a space in that area as well. So there is a lot of discussion to be had about what exactly is the scope of these conversations. It's also interesting, this we mentioned we're already over time, but it's also a form of Lashon Hara, really, talking in a way that delays people. So I will just also mention that it's also somewhat debatable. The Chafetz Chaim says that there's an issur to speak Lashon Hara to one's wife as well. And he says, in fact, that's even worse. Because so it doesn't make it smutter, it's like speaking Lashon Hara to anybody else. And since the tendency of a spouse will be to be makabel what the other spouse says, all the more so then you're running an even greater risk of Kabbalah Lashon Hara at the same time. So he thinks it's even worse than normal Lashon Hara. And one could argue that that point is well taken, but on the other hand, if there is, so to speak, a venting heter, so to speak, with the Chafetz Chaim elsewhere is talking about, that to get something off your chest has a therapeutic value. So then, if you're going to pick one person to talk to, and you're not going to hire a therapist every day of your life when you come home from work, so it seems to make sense that the wife is probably most likely candidate for that for many reasons. They ushtuk gufo, they have a shared mission, they have a shared background, they're there to provide chizuk for each other. So in terms of this goal, you could easily make the opposite argument. So both points are true, and again, this is a part of the balance that we talk about in terms of all of Hilchos Lashon Hara, that we have two opposing svaras, and we try to navigate a path in the middle, but there is definitely what to be said, that if one is going to discuss the day's events with one person in the world, it probably does make sense that it should be the spouse rather than anybody else if it's necessary to clear the head. So both svaras exist, both svaras have their truth to them, and with all of Hilchos Lashon Hara, you find that all the svaras are true. Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chaim, that everything has reality to it in terms of personal issues and real life considerations, and we try to keep them in balance, and we try not to go too much overtime when we talk about them. Okay, did you want to ask a question?
Yeah. Yes,
okay, so our agenda for the rest of the week, so we have to finish Paul Rochelazor.